Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to our favorite Three Martini Lunch of the Week, the Friday edition. Jim Garrity and Greg Corumbus with you, and we'll get to all the turmoil in Egypt in just a moment. But our good martini, Jim, does emanate from CPAC, and if anyone's been reading your jolt, and many do, they'll know your travails there on Thursday. But John Boehner, the House Speaker, speaking at CPAC on Friday and saying basically that the Tea Party, the conservative wing of the party, going to get its way. The House will be voting next week on $100 billion worth of tax cuts. And this, of course, comes at the same time we know that they're going to be voting to defund the president's health care plan. Can't get much better than that heading into the new week.
Amen. And one of the other things kind of interesting to watch about this, I think it was a Wall Street Journal editorialist who observed, this is happening because you don't see top-down leadership in the House. There are probably a lot of folks are enjoying writing Republicans in disarray stories. The freshmen are up in arms. They're holding a revolt. They're getting the leadership and demanding more. But in a way, this is kind of the way things are supposed to be done. Budgets aren't supposed to be sketched out in smoke-filled room behind closed doors. You know, back when the Democrats ran things, we know there was no smoking going on. marijuana smoke-filled rooms or whatever. And then being told from the top down, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi have agreed on this. It's time to, everybody fall in line and vote for it. We have a whole bunch of conservative Republicans in the freshman class who want to see, who said they'd cut $100 billion, and they want to cut $100 billion. Now, because of the continuing resolution, they only have about 7 months of the fiscal year to work with, and that makes cutting the $100 billion a little bit tougher. The response to the freshman is, yeah, but you know what? We said we'd cut $100 billion, so let's do it. And there's, it's kind of nice to see a stand on principle. It's interesting. I was on another podcast, one that just doesn't hold a candle to this, Greg.
Amen.
With Anna Marie Cox over at GQ.com. It's now officially, I've appeared on GQ, and I believe now that I've been in it, it's no longer cool. But we were talking about this, and they were scoffing at the vote to repeal Obamacare when it wasn't really going to go anywhere. And I was observing, look, they made a promise to do it, and they did it. And she's like, it's an empty gesture. I was like, yes, they promised an empty gesture, and they delivered an empty gesture. But in that, and they laughed at that. But my point would be that you have a whole new group of people in Congress who believe that if they promise to do it on the campaign trail, they have to do it, even if it doesn't work out, even if it's difficult, even if it runs into roadblocks in the Senate, even if it faces veto threats. If they said they're going to do it, they have to do it, and that they're honoring all their alternatives. And that's kind of a refreshing breath of fresh air, and it seems like Boehner has grasped that as well. I think I was, just kind of observing, like, look, Greg, we've seen promises kept. We're seeing a humble tone, and we're seeing House Republicans who get into scandal disappearing, faster than David Copperfield. This is a new era in Washington, Greg, and I'm liking it. Just want to see it spread more.
I'm liking it a lot. Be ready for all these debates next week for Democrats to talk about, starving orphans and old people who will have to eat cat food so they can pay for their medication because the Republicans want to cut these things. And it just comes with the territory. They do it every time, and obviously don't believe a word of it because the Republicans are not cruel and heartless people. They see a badly bloated government with plenty of room to trim the fat. So just be ready for that next week. On to the bad martini now. And yesterday was very interesting and certainly humbling, or at least humiliating if you were a member of the mainstream media out there trumpeting your two sources that said that Hosni Mubarak was going to step down. Clearly that got to the president as he was near my home turf in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. The president coming out before Mubarak's statement and not wanting to get too far ahead of the parade, but clearly wanting to leave the impression that this is exactly the parade he wanted to be leading.
What is absolutely clear is that we are witnessing history unfold.
But apparently the cart got put before the horse, at least initially. Here's Mubarak through an interpreter late Thursday.
And that we are not enemy of to anyone, and who do not receive instructions from anyone, and that no one makes the decisions for us apart from the pulse of the street and the sons of the country.
So not only was he not initially stepping down at that point, he was basically telling President Obama where he could go. However, just when it seemed like the White House was probably engulfed in more language that would make Rahm Emanuel blush at the news reports that they did not expect yesterday, here comes this from Vice President Suleiman here on Friday.
Hosni Mubarak تخليه عن منصب رئيس الجمهورية to step down from the presidency.
And so there you go. So the White House just clearly shown to be kind of out of whack here, not sure what they were leading, if they were leading. And even though it eventually turned out just a few hours later the way they wanted it, definitely not a good 24 hours.
You know, Greg, Mubarak's retirement is the most difficult, disputed, and uncertain since that of, I'd say, Brett Favre.
That's exactly right.
You know, keep hearing it promises, it's coming. Now it seems like it's here, but we'll have to see if it really takes. You know, it's one of those circumstances in which I think it's been a eye-opening experience to see. Look, we on the right are skeptical of Obama, but we'd like to think that the entire apparatus of foreign policy, of the State Department, of the intelligence community, of all the different ways of our relationship with our allies, that no matter who's the president, that they function fairly well. And I think it's very clear that we have very little influence over what's going on in Egypt, and we don't always have a fantastic idea of what's going on in there. I thought you were going to mention that CIA Director Leon Panetta was saying in public testimony that it was very likely he would resign tonight. He didn't. Panetta looks very foolish, and now we see – well, actually, it looks like Mubarak did, you know, roughly 12 hours later. I would note this – perhaps this is a circumstance in which the CIA director should not be testifying publicly about rapidly evolving public events.
Well, not only that, he said that he got his intel by watching the media. So thanks for the deep cover information you brought forward there, Director Panetta.
Well, just observing that, you know, obviously you'd hope that the U.S. would have better sources on the ground. Maybe he can't talk about those sorts of things in an open session. But again, this is one of those circumstances in which CIA directors should be seen and not heard, at least not to the general public.
Right.
That's what our administration officials are there for. The other thing was kind of frustrating. I mean, you watch apparently there were reports of disbelief in the White House after Mubarak's speech last night, in which he said, well, I'm not really going to – I'm diverting my power, but I'm not really resigning, which was frustrating. And I just happened to notice in today's Wall Street Journal, the print edition, there's the headline, "Crisis Puts White House in Disarray." Greg, can you think of a day they couldn't have used that headline in a portion of the world? You know, it's, I guess it's part of the environmentalism. They're recycling headlines that can be used for a wide variety of stories and
there
probably many more over the next 2 years. So very frustrating, recognizing that there's not an enormous amount of great options there. But it just kind of feels like if we are the world's superpower and we are, you know, as influential as we think we are, perhaps we should have some levers to pull on this. Perhaps we should have, you know, have developed this. It feels like the entire administration and maybe the entire government has been caught kind of flat-footed and not necessarily expecting this and slow to be able to respond and to keep up with events here. And it's just unnerving for, you know, whatever the next domino that may fall.
On to our third martini now. And just moments after this moment in Egypt where the people are exulting, they believe that they've won. Obviously, we don't know exactly what's coming next. An amazing statement, and a statement so amazing that it bumped Donald Trump from our number three slot today appearing at CPAC. Here's Chris Matthews' initial analysis of this transformational moment in Egypt.
And the stunning thing about watching this is nobody's pulled a gun out. These Americans with their Second Amendment rights craziness don't understand this is how it works.
Second Amendment's crazy. Apparently he disagrees with that little thing called the American Revolution. Turns out we had to use some firearms to win independence from Great Britain, and apparently he doesn't believe that Americans have the right to defend themselves either. So very, very curious, but probably not utterly surprising from Chris Matthews.
It's nice to know that no matter how complicated and divisive and unappetizing and unappealing the circumstances in the Middle East can get, Greg, we'll always have Chris Matthews to laugh at, and he'll always find some way to reassure us. In this case, he's expressing great shock that the largely disarmed citizens of Egypt are not rising up using firearms. Funny how that happens. Once the government doesn't allow you to own any guns, the people tend to not rise up in violent revolutions. Perhaps the more apt Second Amendment-related anecdote of this entire sequence in Egypt has been that as violence got worse and many clothes, the cases, the plainclothes government thugs went around trying to stir up chaos, that ordinary Cairo residents who lived, you know, were used to living in close-knit neighborhoods found themselves needing to defend their homes and needing to defend their neighborhoods from what they hoped were, what they were feared were going to be terribly violent riots and protests. So they were starting, you know, to use kitchen knives and golf clubs and you know, just sticks and whatever they could find to defend their homes. And this is, you know, kind of in the eyes of my friends of the NRA, and I think a lot of American gun owners, like, that's the nightmare scenario.
Right.
That the bad guys have guns and they can do whatever they want, and you've got to use whatever's at hand to defend yourselves. And chances are you're not going to do that well in someone who has the ability to shoot a bullet at you. And that's, you know, that's why we need these sorts of things. And the other thing is that if the United States government ever starts behaving the way the Mubarak government did to its citizens, I want to see a violent revolution. I want to see armed Americans protesting the thing. Thankfully, even on its worst days, our government successes are not as bad as the Egyptian government's human rights abuses and imprisoning political prisoners, et cetera, et cetera. But a typically ignorant statement from Chris Matthews indicated, yeah, I'm surprised he didn't make a reference to defending the Panama Canal over in Egypt again, since that's, you know, once again, with Keith Olbermann gone, Chris Matthews has some very big shoes of stupid to fill over there.
Well, it's amazing. I think Chris Matthews is the first person to win the third martini twice in the same week. So congratulations, Chris Matthews.
Three times next week, Chris. Come on, break your own record. You can do it.
Exactly. It's important to shoot for big goals. Jim, fun week. We'll do it again next week.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.